Blog Talk Radio.
Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Monday, September the 19th, as we like to do once a week. We'll be chatting with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. As always, there's a lot on our plate, lots of things to get into. President Biden was on 60 Minutes last night, made a little bit of news. I'm not sure the White House wanted him to make news, but he did. We'll talk about some other things going on in the country. So let me say hello to our friend Bill Katz. How is everything in New York, Bill?
Well, nothing is ever good here anymore. It's degrees of bad. Mm-hmm. Degrees of bad. We've now become, we're north of New York City, but we now observe with interest the fact that New York City now has to live up to the term of sanctuary city.
Yes.
just as Martha's Vineyard has had to, yes. And Washington, D.C. They put these names on these cities, not realizing there may actually be some obligation involved.
Right.
So we're getting in. Or the mayor of New York, I think, frankly, is fading away. He started out with some promise. Mayor Adams did. I think he means well, but he does not have the political clout in New York State or the managerial ability to pull anything off very effectively. The city just is drifting and drifting and drifting. So New York, I mean, the way we read it, the out-migration of people is now so great that they're taking billions of dollars in taxes with them. And I
right.
just wonder what will happen if the country goes into a deep recession. New York State could go bankrupt. I mean, it could really
yes.
be on its back. And that's pretty much how New York is.
Yes, well, I know. I mean, the number of people leaving, and people don't realize that when people leave a state, they usually take with them their salaries. And if it's
yes.
a business that leaves the state, they usually take with them their payroll. So there's money leaving, not just people. It's not something in the abstract. I mean, it's real money leaving. Well, the good news here in Texas, Bill, is that we have some buses going to New York City. And also,
yes.
I guess the best news of all is that the Dallas Morning News came out today saying that Governor Abbott is up 9 points over Beto O'Rourke, who I understand is in New York City looking for some money. That's what we were told, that he was in New York City looking for some contributions, Bill. So if you see a guy that looks like Beto asking for money, it is Beto, Bill.
Well, yes, and he will suddenly have a Massachusetts Kennedy accent. We're looking
that's,
for that.
Right.
You know, we'll
yes.
put the microphone up. Well, you know, I think Abbott has actually done a very good job as a governor. You know, isn't
mm-hmm.
it interesting that the two most hated governors – from the viewpoint of the Democratic Party, are the two most successful governors in the country. They despise DeSantis and they despise Abbott. Now, the two states that are most beloved by the Democrats right now are New York and California, both of which are hemorrhaging people.
Mm-hmm.
The states where people want to live are Florida and Texas. Isn't that remarkable? They have, of course, these evil governors who do evil
right.
things. I guess that's why all these people want to live in these states, because
right.
they want to be evil.
That's right. They want to be
the mentality.
It really is. And DeSantis, I think the difference between DeSantis and Abbott is that they don't really see Governor Abbott as presidential. I mean, they don't
yeah.
think he's going to run. I guess that's my point. I mean, I think he would make a wonderful president, but I don't think he is going to run. But DeSantis, I think they're scared to death of him because if DeSantis has shown anything is that he's not afraid of them. He will take it right up to them, and he'll pitch inside, as they say in baseball. You know, he's not afraid of pitching inside, and yeah, they're scared to death of DeSantis. Let's start with the story of these buses the flights going to, I'm never sure. Nantucket is the island, right? And Martha's Vineyard is the city. Is that, or Cape Cod?
No. I
always
don't know
get
that
confused.
Much. Martha's Vineyard is on an island, I think.
I see. Okay.
And I think that the migrants, I love the way illegal immigrants has now been turned into migrant.
Right.
Next week there'll be potential presidents.
Right.
Just coming here to look around. Then there's Hyannisport where the Kennedys are, but I don't recall which one was the island, which one.
Yeah.
Martha's Vineyard is on an island. But what is remarkable is the blatant hypocrisy. It isn't even hidden. I mean, people made the point that Barack Obama has, 14 or 16 acres on Martha's Vineyard? He could have easily volunteered two of those or three of those acres temporarily to house these migrants and didn't do so. He doesn't feel any obligations to the country at all. But they have signs up all over Martha's Vineyard. This community is committed to migrants, committed to visitors. And then as soon as they arrived, I don't even think the ignition was turned off on the bus. They were told, you have to go. And it wasn't many hours later when they went. Now, I think the reason they went is that Martha's Vineyard is populated by extremely rich people who know that all they have to do is pick up a telephone and call the right person, and action is taken. So the next campaign contribution will be larger than the one before. And New York the same way. This is a sanctuary city. Give us your tired, your poor. Don't give us your rich. That's also on the Statue of Liberty now. And the hypocrisy is of a kind that people have a right to despise. I mean, you'd think they would be ready to take a certain number of people. Mayor Adams now says that New York is at the breaking point. For God's sake, New York has 8 million people.
Right.
And it took a couple of hundred to break it. Well, you know, maybe that's why he's an unsuccessful mayor. But
right. I find that interesting what you just said, because you're right. It's a city of 8 million people, a huge city. The city itself probably has a bigger GDP than many states. And yet 100 people arrive, 200, whatever the number, and they're at a breaking point. So either the mayor is lying or the city of New York is in worse shape than we thought it was, Bill. How can you be at a breaking point if you get 100 people in a bus? I can see if they were getting 10,000 people, but my goodness, 100 people or 500, whatever it was. I mean, it seems to me that they should have been able to take these people and put them in certain places, or maybe offer citizens the opportunity to put them in their homes, like Barack Obama and his Ocean City there, or whatever, his mansion by the ocean. But they didn't. I mean, they immediately start blaming the governor of Texas or the governor of Florida as evil people. And honestly, everybody's laughing down here at this. I mean, when you go down to the border and you talk to these mayors down there, many of them Democrats, these little town mayors, they're all laughing. They're saying, my gosh, you know, the mayor of Del Rio, Texas, Bill, a little town of 15,000 people on the border. He says, you know, they're complaining up there over 500 people. I had 10,000 people on the other side of the river who wanted to come into my city of 15,000. Now that,
absolutely,
you talk about stretching a city, that's stretching it, not what's happening in New York, Bill.
You're absolutely correct. I mean, the hypocrisy, but also not beyond the hypocrisy, the utter contempt that people in these or who run these sanctuary cities have for other Americans. I mean, they know there's a tragedy at the border down there. They don't care. They make it plain they don't care. If you would call somebody, though, illegal, that's terrible to say about anybody. We don't say it here. Well, they don't have any immigrants there. And then when the tragedy breaks out at the border, they show no interest. It is so common in left-wing politics, and maybe all
yes.
politics, maybe there's a certain amount of it on all sides, but in left-wing politics in particular, I mean, you look, for example, today at women who have needs, young women in the athletic area who've been absolutely ignored and treated with contempt by the women's movement because they won't go along with this men who think as women should be allowed to play as women nonsense, and other things that now have come up involving women. And the women's movement doesn't even seem interested in women anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It only seems interested in what the latest left-wing fashion is.
That's right. No, you're exactly right. It's also interesting what a lot of people down here are saying, particularly when you get out to the closer to the border, is they say, look, we just had 53 migrants, or 53, whatever you want to call them, people who died inside a trailer.
That's right. Horrible.
Horrible. We're finding bodies of people everywhere. People are drowning. So, you know, what about that humanitarian story? Nobody wants to talk about that. And I think what really tops it off, Bill, they want to file kidnapping charges against the
guy.
Yes,
isn't that something?
And, you know, and Jonathan Turley was on TV, I guess, yesterday and today, saying that it's ridiculous. These people sign a form that says, I accept your trip to Washington. It's not like they're forcing them into a bus. It's voluntary.
That's right. Yes, that's right. Well, and it's a nice bus, and maybe they've heard that there are nicer places out there. But the whole thing, especially when you add to it, the Vice President of the United States, the eminent Kamala Harris, who is noted for giving great and clear speeches, saying on television the border is secure when everybody knows it isn't secure.
Right.
You know, I mean, even there have been a few reporters who have gotten frustrated enough to ask her or other spokespeople for the administration, what you're saying is not true. The border is not secure. But they feel that they can fool enough people to squeeze by the midterms, and they might. They
right.
might. They might just win this election.
Yeah, they might just pull it off. But I think it's interesting, Henry Cuellar, Democrat down there, he's saying the border is not secure. Now, he's up for a tough reelection down there. I think he's going to win.
Yes.
He's probably the only Democrat who could win in that region right now. But he's denying that it's secure. I saw Senator Manchin, Joe Manchin, that say the same thing. So, I mean, how can you have a secure border when you have 2 million people who've crossed your border? I mean, common sense just tells you you've got a problem, Bill.
Of course, look, there's no more common sense. That's the problem in politics today. People, you know, it's the old story. People lie when they know they can get away with it. And
mm-hmm.
too many people are getting away with lying on the Democratic side because they know that the one institution that's there to stop them, the press, will do nothing of the kind. The Republicans do not have the slightest idea how to deal with the press. The press is on the side of the Democrats, and they will do anything to protect them. And that is what I'm really concerned about in this election, that the Republicans the Democrats don't understand that there's a big finger on the scale.
Right. And I think two examples of that, Bill, you mentioned one, and that is the interview with Vice President Harris, where I have no idea what happened to Chuck Todd, but he sort of went to sleep. In that interview, he let the vice president go unchallenged completely on her comments about the secured border. But last night, on Sunday night, there was an interview with CBS. I forgot the name of the fellow who did the interview.
Scott Pelley.
Yeah, Scott Pelley. You know, he wasn't totally bad, but there was no follow-up on much of what President Biden said. And I thought last night we learned a couple of things, Bill, that might be interesting. Number one, the pandemic is over. Did you know that? The pandemic is over. So it's over.
It's,
I mean, it's over now.
Yeah.
No more masks, no more restrictions. I hope the teachers union got the memo. There's no restrictions, and it's over. The pandemic is over, Bill.
Yes, and we've heard it now from the official and scientifically oriented president. And he said it's over. And then he also said we would defend Taiwan. And the White House immediately had to pull that one back because the implication was that we'd be sending troops. So now we don't know what the policy is, but we didn't know before the interview. So how can we complain? We didn't lose anything. We were misinformed before, and we're misinformed now.
But how does – see, this is pretty – the one about the pandemic is more political, I guess. But the one about Taiwan, I mean, that could get us into a war, comments like that.
Absolutely.
Because
the
people in Taiwan may say, oh, okay, he's ready to defend us. Maybe we can get provocative, you know. So, I mean, people can take a message about war and sometimes do some crazy things. So, but how does he fumble a question like that? That's just amazing to me because it's always been the policy of the United States not to support Taiwan militarily with troops. That is, we sell them a lot of weapons, but we don't send in troops. And I don't know of a single president, going back to Richard Nixon, who has ever said we're going to defend Taiwan with troops if they're invaded by the Chinese. And it's not like
right.
the Chinese just started talking about invading Taiwan. They've been talking about it for as far as I can remember, Bill.
That is part of their foreign policy.
Yes.
Very, very, you know, to the extent that anything can be holy to the Chinese government, that's holy. No, I don't think they should continue to ask President Biden whether we'll defend Taiwan. I think we need a more assertive, clearer, and more intelligent voice. I think Kamala Harris should answer
right.
the question. Now, she was asked, will we defend Taiwan? And she'd probably say, well, we already are. I mean, you wouldn't ask a man that question. We are, and we're defending like we with the border, and it's secure Taiwan, and that's
right.
it. You know?
That's it. Taiwan would be secure then, at that point.
That's right.
Yeah, Taiwan would be secured, and everybody would listen to the vice president remind us that Taiwan is secure. But Bill, seriously, I mean, isn't it scary that every time the president goes on television that there's like a team at the White House ready to come out and clean up after him? I mean, it's pretty
absolutely.
Scary, Bill.
Absolutely. I mean, look, standards today. I was thinking about this just yesterday, that I remember in 1960, the iconic 1960 Kennedy-Nixon election, there was a substantial battle for the Democratic nomination. Some of the biggest names and best people in politics were involved, but it appeared late in the campaign for the nomination that Senator Kennedy was leading. And I remember Eleanor Roosevelt, the widow of Franklin D. Roosevelt, getting up in a public speech and publicly challenging Kennedy and saying, "Are you ready, Senator?" In effect saying, do you have the experience, the knowledge, the wisdom to be president? Well, John F. Kennedy was a World War II veteran who was wounded. He had written or co-written three books. He had served in the United States Congress since 1946, a total of 14 years. He was on in the Senate for, I think, 8 years on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. And she was questioning whether he was ready. Look at the standards today. They are so much lower. I mean, you have a man of the White House who should never have been allowed to be president because of his obvious restrictions. You have a vice president who does not speak the English language, even though she was born here. You have names being mentioned for the presidency who would have been laughed at in 1960. I think we really have to take account of the fact that politically this country is going in reverse. At a time when we need wisdom and experience in the presidency and international prestige, look what we have. I mean, and I think a lot of this has to do with the attempts in the 1970s to democratize the nominating process. I don't really care if it's democratized. A political party is a private organization. They can run it any way they want as long as the candidate is good. And, you know, I've said many times, you can go back to the days of the smoke-filled rooms, and there's plenty to object to there, But those guys never went to a national convention and nominated a jerk. They wouldn't allow it. They were professionals. Now you just it's so discouraging to look at the quality of our national leadership.
Well, one thing, too, Bill, not to get partisan, but if you compare the two sides, it does seem to me that look at the governors, and you were talking about this before. If you look at the governors, you have very successful governors in Florida, in Texas, now in Virginia, and then you have and those three are Republicans. And then you have not very successful governors in California, Illinois, and New York, and those three are Democrats. And, you know, I cannot think of a situation where a guy like Newsom would run for president. How would he explain the situation in California in a national debate? I mean, he's losing people like crazy. What's he going to say? People in California just like to travel to other states? I mean, it's ridiculous how bad it is. And the problem with the Democrat Party is, I think in that respect, much worse than the Republican Party, because the Republican Party has success stories that they can run.
That's
successful
right.
People,
yes.
At least successful at what they're doing. And the Democrats have people who are either too old or they're not very successful at what they're doing. That's, to me, that's how I would compare the two benches. If this was a sporting event, I think the Republicans have a much younger and better bench, Bill.
The Republican bench is much deeper than the Democratic bench for exactly the reasons that you described. They have success stories. They make success and achievement part of their platform. The Democratic Party, I cannot think of one person in contention for a future nomination in the Democratic Party who I'd want in the White House. And of course, they have all these extra requirements. You have to be from a particular group. You have to be a victim. You have, if you're not a victim, we'll make something up. It has almost nothing to do with the presidency. And I think that's very sad, because what the Republicans have going for them is terrific, is that level of experience. I wish they had more foreign policy experience, but there are people in the Senate who do have that experience, people like Marco Rubio. But the two parties are that different. However, what the Democratic Party does have going for it is that it knows how to run a scare campaign, which is what they're doing right now. They try to frighten people. They try to especially frighten minorities. If the Republicans get in, you'll go back to slavery. Biden actually once said that in a campaign.
He said that against Romney. Yes,
and it amazes me that the Democratic Party can still pull off victories. Now, either that's because the Republican Party is so weak and so uninterested in really fighting, or maybe there are some of them hidden reason that we don't know. But it is incredible where we are politically, nationally and internationally.
Yeah, that's right. And again, I just wanted to mention this. That was in 2012. Where then Vice President Biden said that the GOP candidate Mitt Romney would do that, forgetting that Mitt Romney's father, the late governor of Michigan, had actually marched with Martin Luther King in the 1960s,
which is
you know, pretty remarkable that his son would be accused of that after his father had marched with Martin Luther King back then. The other thing about this interview with CBS last night, Bill, was the almost flaky way that President Biden spoke about inflation. It's only 8.3, and it was 8. It's crazy. It's like you would have expected him to say, look, it is very, very hard and very bad, and we sympathize with people. And I understand, I mean, when Jill goes to the store, she tells me how expensive everything is, you know, that kind of thing. But no, he got into a little technicality. Well, you know, it's 8.3, and it didn't just – I thought, my goodness, what a disaster, Bill.
Well, the fact is that they don't seem to realize that there are real people out there spending real money, sometimes that they don't have, to buy basic groceries. And he doesn't know how to address it. He sounds like an old-time Republican, actually. That's the way the Republican Party used to be. They would, you know, give you statistics and, well, it's not that big a problem. But there's been a role reversal in American politics. I saw some polling results this morning where the greatest strength of the Democratic Party, the Republican Party, is coming from men who don't have college educations. Now,
yes,
at one time, that was the Democratic constituency. But the Democratic constituency today arrives at the polling place in a Tesla.
That's right. Well, hopefully they'll have the opportunity to charge it up, Bill. Hopefully we don't have a blackout and they won't be able to charge it up. Yeah, but you're right. You're right. I mean, the I don't like to say uneducated because that sounds bad. The man without a college degree who may be a plumber and doing quite well probably shows up with a truck. And the little college professor shows up on driving a Tesla. You're probably right about that. One thing that I wanted to ask you, Bill, before we take a break, we had like a little thing going back and forth here, which is kind of funny, between Governor DeSantis and Governor Newsom. And they were talking about each other's hair. And I think one has challenged the other to a debate. I wonder if that'll happen, Bill.
I doubt it, if it will happen. I think it was Newsom who challenged DeSantis to a debate. And I think if I were DeSantis, I would say I haven't got the time. I'm not running against him. I this is not recreation. Newsom came up silly, but Newsom did survive a recall. I mean, there are a lot of people in California who really must be very flaky to vote for Gavin Newsom. Or it could have been that the Republicans just didn't put up a good enough candidate. And that is one of my great concerns right now, is that we're in the middle of a very important midterm election year, and the Republicans don't seem to have begun that campaign.
Well, we're expecting – I understood that it was going to happen, but then the Queen passed away, and they didn't come forward with their contract with America 2022 version. I understand it's supposed to happen at least over at the House this week.
Yes.
So we'll wait for that. They decided to put it off because obviously the Queen and her funeral and all of that took up a lot of time. So we'll see. But you're right. I mean, they have to give a reason to vote for. It's not simply a question of, vote against Biden. You have to have a reason to vote Republican. And in some places they're doing it. In other places they're not. They just have to come together and do it. We're going to take a little break, and we'll be back with our friend Bill Katz right after this. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, chatting with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. I thought you would enjoy this one, Bill. There's an immigration activist here in Texas who says that they're going to send some buses down to the border to stop the buses going north. So I wonder how that's going to work out. I guess we're going to have buses running into each other on the highways. That's... Hopefully nobody loses their cool, Bill.
Well, that whole area of American life right now is a farce. But I'm always reminded of the comment made by Daniel Patrick Moynihan, in which he proposed the term defining deviancy down. I think that was original with him, meaning that people get used to bad conditions. And it's true. If this goes on for a number of years, the situation we're in now, the dumbing down of the schools, the inability to buy basic groceries at anywhere near decent a price, if it goes on for a certain number of years, that's going to be the only thing people knew, and the only thing especially that young people knew, and they get used to it. I don't know how they get
they
around
do.
It, but they get used to it. And that's the tragedy. You people have to be stimulated to get out of their situation and to advance it, not to just accept
right.
it. But when you have a 1-2 punch today of the universities and the press, all on one, well, not all, but almost all on one side of the political spectrum, that is not healthy, and it's a prescription for the kind of disaster we're seeing now.
Right. I guess the biggest hope that I have, Bill, there's a huge story that came out in the Dallas Morning News today talking about the involvement of the parents in politics
yes.
in Texas. It's really fascinating because it really shows you that the parents have not stopped. I mean, they took over the school boards, and they're going the whole distance. And that's my hope, that the parents are getting involved. They're either going to take the kids out of public schools, which they're doing in huge numbers, or they're going to force the public schools to be schools again. And that's my hope, that maybe people get fed up with being fed up and start doing something. And I can tell you, I see that a lot with parents who are just fed up with the schools, and the next thing is they're going to start getting fed up with the colleges too, Bill.
Oh, well, I think that's already occurring. I think people
yes.
see that they are laying out huge amounts of money, except at some schools, by the way, where they don't charge tuition anymore. I don't think anybody in an Ivy League school today really pays for their tuition. There are all kinds of programs, but at any rate, they see the enormous amount of money going out for education. We get very little for it, and it delays the entry of the child or the young adult into the workforce. You know, we
mm-hmm.
had a lot of these discussions in the 1950s. Many people today are unaware of it. We discussed in the 1950s issues of what should be taught to a college student. The question how do we best prepare a student for the real life? Are the kids spending too much time in school? In other words, are we prolonging adolescence? That was the term that was used. Do we prolong adolescence? Just keep them in school and keep them in school and keep them in school and never really teach them anything useful. That was brought up in the 1980s. That discussion came back with the beginnings of what we're seeing in small towns today, where we noticed that small southern towns that were strongly conservative suddenly were adopting liberal policies, and they were traced to the school boards, but nobody asked too many questions. But the discussions that we're having now are very similar to the discussions we had in the past, and we
yeah.
never seem to resolve. We never seem to resolve anything.
Yeah. Now I don't know. I'm not familiar with what happened in the 1950s, but what I do see today, Bill, is mothers, and mothers are the ones really carrying the load here. They're out there fighting for their kids in a way it makes you proud that parents
yes.
care that much about their kids, because, you know, we always hear about, you know, that there's a bunch of kids who are growing up without parents who care about them. Well, that's probably true. There have always been. But I can tell you, the parents that I see fighting for their kids, they are motivated by one thing and one thing only, and that is their kids. They don't want their kids being indoctrinated, Bill, and being taught stuff that they don't want to hear, Bill.
That's exactly right. I think that one of the greatest concerns parents have today is, first of all, age inappropriateness, where they're teaching little
yes.
children about sex and about you can choose your sex, you can do this, you know, after
right.
you put away the doll, you can choose your sex. And not only are they doing that in the schools, they're trying to prevent the parents from knowing
right.
that they're doing it. It's an absolute outrage. You know, for decades, educators have been trying to encourage parents to participate in their children's education. And all of a sudden we're told they don't want the parents there, the parents are disruptive, they're domestic terrorists, they're old-fashioned, they don't understand.
Right.
If I were a parent today, I would gather with other parents, and they're doing this, to demand
yes.
parental rights. Now, in Virginia, there's a good parental rights movement that's moving forward under Governor Youngkin. And one of the things that I would demand is the right to visit the school at any time, as long as I give advance notice.
Right.
They should have a section in every classroom devoted to parents, but they don't want that because they don't want the parents to know what they're actually teaching. And this is true in many schools, not all by any means, but many schools. The mm-hmm. old notion of the friendly old teacher, you know, who's been a teacher for many years and drives a 15-year-old Chevy, that notion is a notion of the past. Today, the teachers are taught to be politically active, to indoctrinate their children. The teachers' colleges are profoundly left-wing in many cases, and we're seeing the result of that in the product that gets turned out.
Yeah, well, I can tell you that, you know, our experience with three sons was 20 years ago. That's when my kids were in the primary school, the middle school, that type of thing. And, you know, what we saw from the parents, I mean, from the teachers back then, was an entirely different teacher. The teachers were very dedicated to teaching your kids. And I didn't see any social activism. I didn't see any, and none of my sons came home and said, you know, gee, my teacher said that George Washington is a racist or something like that. Those kinds of, you know, that never happened. And,
no.
And so something changed. And something did change in the people going into the profession here, into the teaching profession in the last maybe 5 to 10 years that turned them into these social activists. Something changed. And the teachers' union, I think, used the pandemic to take advantage of this, but it has all backfired, Bill. It has all backfired because the parents are outraged. I mean, I've never seen parents this active, Bill.
You're right, and the parents are outraged. However, I am not so sure this war will be won by our side because there is enormous power on the other side. The teachers' union being one factor, the teachers' unions basically control the Democratic Party. And the party will not turn against them. And you've got a lot of these Democratic office holders. When parents come to complain, they either ignore them or they say, I'll look into it. And then they go along and allow this outrage to continue, where the children are not in many cases learning basic skills, especially
right.
if they're minority children. But they're learning all about how bad America is and that you should be against the federal government. And you should be for this particular person. And then when this is presented to them, the parent is told, well, you're not bright enough to know what actually
right.
goes on in the classroom.
Yeah.
And they know that if they dare to challenge it, they'll be called racist. And as one
right.
mother said, who I saw interviewed, she said, I don't like to be called a racist. And so many of them, while many are active, many of them are still afraid.
Yes, that's right. But the one... I hear what you're saying, but the one thing, Bill, that I believe the card that the parents can play, and you're already seeing this in Arizona with their school choice, and it's going to happen here in Texas and a lot of places, I think that school choice is going to be the demise of the teachers' union, at least in the red states, I mean, not in California, perhaps not in New York, but certainly, a lot of parents are going to be demanding school choice, saying, I'm already paying for my kids' education, and you're taxing me for the public education. Why should I pay twice? That's what I'm hearing, and it seems to be growing, a growing movement, Bill. That's what I can tell you. But these parents are very involved, and they're very actively involved in their kids' education. A couple of topics that I want to get into, Bill. This week, because time always flies when you and I chat, I want to get your reaction, Bill, to what we just saw from London and the Queen's funeral. I'm not an expert on the monarchy. I don't know anything about it other than just the basics, you know, Henry VIII, that kind of thing. That's all I know. I don't really know anything deeper than that. But what I saw was a beautiful funeral, a lot of pageantry, a lot of tradition, and if I was a young person in the UK, I think that's good that I saw that because it taught me so much history just watching funeral, Bill.
That's
I mean,
right.
the history, and going into that building, you know, watching, this is the first time that anybody has ever seen, you know, the transfer of the crown, what that incredible
right.
scene that they had, because back in 1952, it was on film, but very few people were watching live television back then, and certainly not around the world. So,
and it was,
you know,
and it was
so much,
black and white.
It was black and white. So all of these spectacular scenes of British history and the pageantry and all of that. I think that was great, Bill. I was like it's like a history lesson, and I was very happy for it, Bill.
Well, I was happy for it too because it reminded people of the importance of tradition. That doesn't mean you have to go about it blindly, but a country that forgets its traditions and its history is going to fall apart. And a lot of the Western countries are falling apart because the so-called sophisticates, who really aren't, told them, well, your history is only one minor part of civilization. There are new ideas, you know, often bad ideas. I remember one teacher that I saw interviewed a couple of years ago said, well, we don't teach history the way we used to. And when I noticed the historical illiteracy of some of the teachers, not just the students, I think maybe they should go back to the way they taught it originally. But yes,
yeah,
I think this was – I don't know how American young people will react to this, you know, to all this pageantry, but I hope British young people will say we have a country and we have a history. Because they
absolutely
wokeism came to Britain before it came to the United States.
Yes. No, I just thought it was lovely. I mean, the whole thing was so beautiful, and the pageantry and the whole history, and I thought it was absolutely great, and it was such a history lesson for me because there were a lot of things I didn't know about the monarchy, but the funeral, the everything about it was just absolutely beautiful. And it's sort of interesting because every time we have one of these funerals, whether it's President Reagan or President Bush here recently, or I'm sure you remember President Kennedy, it seems like there's always that pageantry and tradition that comes back, not to the same as the monarchy, but the country comes together. There's a sense of patriotism. I heard somebody today say that a British person who was doing the analysis on TV said, this country is united, and I feel very proud of being British. And that's good to hear, Bill.
I think it's good to hear. There's been so much from the Marxist left that you have nothing to be proud of. You're a disgrace. Well, even Christiane Amanpour, that deep intellect at CNN, thought this was a good time for the British to challenge their history. Why would you want to challenge your history right now? Okay, they were a colonial power. Nobody denies that. You know, what they told you, think somebody was denying it. Colonies? What colonies? It was a colonial power. We accept that, but it's not today. And they did a lot of good in the world. They did probably some bad. But some of the countries that were colonized were not exactly paradises on earth. I mean, they just want to live in the past, make accusations. Bring things down, but I think that on balance, Britain, with many faults, as with every country, has had a pretty damn good record, and they have invented or created many of the basic ideas in our legal system, in our system of national defense. They're a technological nation, and I think they have a lot to be proud of, and I do hope that pride continues.
I agree.
Because
no, there's no question. They've given a lot to the world that we sometimes take for granted, like the Bill of Rights and stuff like that, rights and courts. I don't think they had courts in Africa before the British colonized them. I don't remember whether you got defense lawyers when Moctezuma arrested you. I don't think he gave you a lawyer in the old Aztecs. I mean, I don't mean to be disrespectful against those civilizations, but you get the feeling from listening to many of these woke people that before the British people came, everything was like a paradise, and the British spoiled it. The same with the Spaniards over here. Like, oh my gosh, everything was beautiful until the terrible Spaniards came and destroyed it. It reminds me, if I may, Bill, a quick story. Bill Maher, I think you saw the video of Bill Maher.
Yes.
And going after the woke. And he had a line, I'm paraphrasing, but he said, yes, Columbus did some atrocious things back in 1492, but that's because there were a lot of other people who were atrocious back in 1492.
Well, that's
true. You cannot judge them with our standards because it was a different time. And so I'm so happy that Bill Maher, from time to time, takes on these people because when he does it, it really works, Bill. I think it does.
I think it does too. And he makes news in a good way, because he's one of the few liberals who has publicly challenged wokeism. And I think he's been very effective at it. I agree with you.
Yeah, he has. And I just thought it's a little video that is going around. I don't watch his show, but I do get these clips, these video clips that they distribute. And I think everybody should watch it. It was just absolutely so well done, that it was worth saving. And I know I sent it to a couple of my friends, to my sons, and they thought it was a lot of fun too as well. Bill, one big story. I don't know how much you have been following this, but it came out of Texas, or at least a judge here in Texas, and this has to do with Facebook. Texas has gone after Facebook and Twitter, saying that they're discriminating against certain points of view. And this is apparently going to go to the Supreme Court eventually. I like this idea. I mean, I like the idea that we break up these companies that are operating under this 230 protection, when in fact they're nothing but political parties. I mean, look, Facebook and Twitter probably had more involvement in the 2020 election than anybody else, Bill.
That's right. Absolutely right. Well, at least things are being discussed. The pandemic really put discussion of major issues on hold for almost 2 years. I'm delighted, for example, that people are finally addressing the subject of electric cars and realizing that these are not miracle machines. They're not going to save the earth. When you get your Honda with a $3,000 battery in it, it is not going to save the earth. It may make some improvement. It may not make any improvement. But I think people are taking a very cold second look at the subject of electric cars, and why should I have to buy one?
Yes. And, you know, somebody was joking about the fact that there is a subsidy, something like a $7,000 subsidy to buy some of these electric cars. But where is the subsidy coming from? It's coming from the taxpayers. So, you know, money from one pocket is subsidizing the money from the other pocket. And I have nothing against electric cars. I always like to tell people that. I'm sure they're very good. And many people, you see a lot of them driving around, and they look like very nice cars, and they drive very well. I understand they're very quiet when you drive
they
one
are.
Of these things. And, yeah, they look fine. They look beautiful.
That's because they're not moving.
That's right. Well,
yes,
but,
well,
I think some people think
that if the battery runs down, you go into the drugstore and get a package of AAAs, you know?
Right.
They don't realize what a battery-powered car consists of. That battery, first of all, is toxic. It is absolutely toxic. And manufacturing it is toxic. And people now are being made aware of the fact that if we all go to electric cars, every night in America, people will plug in all those cars, millions and millions of electric cars. Where is the electricity going to come from to charge those cars? I don't know.
That's what they're asking in California, because they don't have enough power as it is to run their state. And now on top of that, they're gonna force you to drive an electric car. I have a funny feeling, Bill. I told this to a friend yesterday that we were having lunch, and I said, I think in about 10 years, there's going to be a rethinking of all of this, the electric cars, the green energy, and the green energy maybe before that. And a lot of people are going to say, you know what, we went too fast. We jumped to too many conclusions. We're not ready for it. Let's build nuclear plants, or let's build more power plants that run on natural gas or whatever, or fuels or fossil fuels, because that's the only way we're going to be able to run our country, Bill. Look what's happening in Europe. They're going to be cold this year in Europe, Bill.
Absolutely. Well, they went crazy. They went completely crazy, except including the Germans. Well, they always go crazy. There's always a point where you look at Germany and they're crazy. But I mean, to close down nuclear power plants that were efficient and safe because somebody tells you to, because some movement says this is what we demand, that's what basically happened. And that's happening all over the Western world. Some kook comes up with an idea, sells it to a television network, and suddenly it becomes public policy because we want to be right and we want to be careful without
right.
any real consideration and any real discussion. And I think
well, I think the next time
– because...
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Bill, I was going to say the next time that some 18-year-old girl comes into the political arena preaching about energy and the future, I have a feeling that people are going to be a little bit more cynical because a lot of what is going on in Europe is they really went for this, you know, how dare you, you know, misuse our planet and all of that, that young woman Greta, and I'm sure she's a very nice woman, but I think that many serious people should have been more careful listening to her because this winter, I have a feeling that there are many people in Europe this winter coming up who are going to be thinking of Greta, but they're not going to be able to repeat publicly what they think of her, Bill.
Well, I think that's true. I'd like to know what Greta's income is. I'm sure she doesn't give free – it's like this guy Kendi, who's the big racial – what is it, critical race theory guy. He
yes.
charges $40,000 an hour.
Right.
And he gets it from universities. How much scholarship money is lost there? So he can come and say what anybody can read about in his book. He's become fabulously wealthy, and I think people ought to start looking at the money in some of these movements.
Oh, absolutely. There's lots of it. There's lots of it. Bill, just a quick note. Gil Hodges' widow passed away, and she was very
95.
Instrumental. Yeah, she was very instrumental in making sure that he got into the Hall of Fame, was a big supporter of his Hall of Fame campaign. So maybe that takes you back a little bit to your 1950s, Bill, the Dodgers. And I don't know how
Number
visible
14.
She was. Yeah, I don't know how visible the wives were with the Dodgers, but I think I've heard from you that they would usually leave the park together and eat as families in the area, Bill.
They often would go out to Lundy's, which was a seafood restaurant, and you'd see a bunch of Brooklyn Dodgers there, and it was an understanding with the public that you left them alone. But
yeah.
You'd go to Ebbets Field, and after the game, and I periodically went to Ebbets Field with my parents. After the game, you'd go out, and you'd see Pee Wee Reese's wife leaning against the Pontiac that was given to him on Pee Wee Reese Day, and waiting for him like any other wife would wait. There was not this royalty thing today where, I mean, these players are driven in limos and they have Mercedes Benzes and make millions of dollars. It's hard to root for a guy who gets $26,000 just for going up to the plate. He doesn't even have to do anything.
Right.
See, that's extra. That's an extra contract.
That's right.
I mean, the game has
$10,000
been so distorted.
$10,000 a strike and $10,000
yes, that's
a ball,
right.
something like that. But I, you know, I was not familiar with his widow, so I did read about her this weekend. She seemed like a very nice lady and
yes.
somebody who was instrumental in his career as a supportive wife and then, of course, always worked with the groups that wanted to put Gil Hodges in the Hall of Fame. So, overall, I'm glad she got to live to see Gil Hodges in the Hall of Fame. That, I'm
yes,
sure, must
yes.
have been an amazing moment for her. She did speak, by the way, at the Hall of Fame ceremony. So that was a great move. Well, Bill, as always, thank you so much for your time, and we look forward to the next time, and maybe they're not going to do any more interviews with the President of the United States on television, Bill. Maybe they're going to submit questions in writing and reply in writing, Bill.
Either that or they will ask the White House news secretary, who is the only person in the White House less informed than the President. But yes, they'll send him back to the basement where they put him during the campaign. When he was running, he had the basement theory. And
that's right.
He defeated Donald Trump by just campaigning from the basement. Whatever it is, it's not the America I know.
No. I used to remember presidents speaking more to the media. That wasn't very long ago. Bill, have a wonderful week, and we'll talk to you later.
Thank you, Sylvia. Looking forward to it.
Looking forward to it. Our good friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Lots of good stuff you can read at Urgent Agenda. We always link it on the show information, so I hope you're checking it out. Have a wonderful day, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.